Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined by Barry Trammell, here to recap the Thunder's 128-99 loss to the Los Angeles Lakers on Wednesday night at Chesapeake Energy Arena. This was sort of a predictable result and another blowout loss by the Thunder. That's three blowouts of their six losses. But yeah, you could sort of see this one coming. Al Horford was out. He rested on the second night of a back-to-back. That meant Isaiah Roby drew the start. Isaiah Roby defended Marc Gasol. Darius Bazley defended Anthony Davis. And that basically tells you all you need to know about tonight, because Anthony Davis was obviously a mismatch, did most of his work early, scored 12 points in the first quarter. Barry, you were asking guys about it post-game. It's just like the Lakers, obviously they have LeBron, they have Anthony Davis, but like their sheer size was just unfair for the Thunder.
Well, what's interesting about the Lakers, and it was interesting last season, you know, the league is actually, I don't know if the league is getting shorter, but the league is getting more perimeter oriented. It's getting quicker. And in a lot of ways, it is getting smaller.
Yeah, leaner.
Leaner. Small ball, you know, that's become an automatic type of phrase that a lot of teams embrace, including the Thunder. Last year, Thunder's best lineup, three point guards, two of them small by NBA standards, CP and Dennis Schroeder. And you just don't see many big rough and tumble teams. And I'd sort of forgotten about it, but tonight, first period or first possession of the game, golly, there's Lou Dort guarding LeBron James. I love Lou Dort. You know, he's a human bowling ball, but he can't match up with LeBron James.
So is LeBron, and LeBron's 6 inches taller.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And then, you know, there for a while, Kenrich Williams is guarding LeBron. Sometimes I wonder what goes through LeBron's mind when they send guys out that really just can't mess with him. And then there were about three or four just priceless possessions in which Poku guarded LeBron James. And let me tell you what, LeBron twice or maybe three times, he just sort of dribbled for a few seconds. And then he just did step back jumpers, three pointers, which is the LeBron James method of load management. He's not necessarily going to take the game off. He's going to take a possession off by making three pointers over a 7-footer from Serbia, who is half his age and half his weight. So it was almost a distortion of a basketball game. It's almost like it was, you know, two-dimensional. They're playing in different dimensions, the Thunder and the Lakers. There's nothing at all to me was similar about those teams.
Bazley had zero chance in that Davis match.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Thunder's been lucky for 7 years. The Thunder had a guy that they could run out there. For the people who thought Steven Adams was overpaid, I mean, back-to-back nights we saw it. The Thunder had a guy that could run out there and guard LaMarcus Aldridge, could run out there and guard Anthony Davis. And you sort of see what life is like when you don't have one of those guys. Yeah, Adams didn't stop those guys, but nobody else stops them either. And it's almost like a night off for Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
When he plays, you know, half the teams in the league that can't possibly match up to him.
Yeah. So, I mean, Davis, like I said, he had 12 in the first quarter, but then he only finished with 18. Didn't have to play much. He was 8 of 13. LeBron, 9 of 20, 26 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. And then Montrezl Harrell off the bench, he was 8 of 12. He had 21 points. So the combination, Gasol only scored 3. But you had Gasol, you had Davis, and then you had Harrell, none of which the Thunder could really match up against. And, you know, Dignault brought up an interesting point after the game that even if Al Horford was available, Horford would have guarded Marc Gasol to start the game, which meant that Bazley still would have had to have defended Anthony Davis, but you would have had, you know, more depth. You've got Muscala coming in there trying to guard Harrell. Harrell's a bowling ball. Harrell's like a bigger Lu Dort, basically. So just the way they scored inside was was quite something. This was just an overmatched game. Like we've seen the Thunder get blown out by the Pelicans, by the Heat, but this one felt different. It was just like those teams, you know, you can sort of contend with a little bit, but the Lakers are just clearly in a tier to themselves, and they deserve that as the defending champions.
You know, you're right, and you've mentioned Montrezl Harrell a couple times. He woke up on the wrong side of the bed today. He looked like he's trying to score 80 points on the Thunder. I don't know if somebody made him mad or what the deal was. I wanted to say, hey, listen, fella, save your venom for the Clippers, you know, who you didn't get happy with there at the end. Thunder never did anything to you. Take it easy. But, yeah, it was just a mismatch, a total mismatch. And, you know, to me, it was a little bit of a tonic, a good thing to happen, because, you know, everybody was caught up in this euphoria of, look at the Thunder. They're 5-4. They had this great road trip. And then they lose to the Spurs and didn't play very well. That happens. Everybody knows that. But then about a quarter and a half into the game tonight, reality set in, which is, this is what real big-time championship-level teams look like. And the Thunder's a million miles away.
Yeah, that's a great point. It is reality. And, you know, we have sort of been warning against this. Like, for everyone thinks that this Thunder team is too good to tank, I know they're the Lakers. I know they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. But just watch that game and then tell me that they're too good to tank. Just look at the scores. Like, there's no doubt this Thunder team has overperformed their record. They're 5-6. I didn't think they'd be 5-6 at this point. But go ahead and check the scores on those six losses, because one of them was a really close one to the Jazz. But then the other five are all double-digit losses. Five of the Thunder's six losses are by double digits. Three of those six, half of them, are by at least 28 points. They've lost three games by at least 28 points. And not even average teams do that in this small of a sample. I mean, I feel like all the underlying numbers point to a worse team than, you know, hovering around 500.
Yeah. And, you know, the Thunder's going to finish, you know, actually better than I thought.
They could win 22 games, 25?
Yeah, 20. Yeah, they could, and they might. But they're not going to go 36-36. This is not a scrappy team that's going to hang around. You know, if they'd have beat the Spurs, they'd have actually been in the playoffs, if you know, in the standing, the top eight of the West. That's not going to happen here in a couple of weeks. They're not going to be knocking on the door to get in the top eight of the West. So, to me, that's a good thing. You know, you don't want to swim upstream. You're rebuilding, so rebuild. It's a fun team to watch, except when they go out there and they got Marc Gasol, who is, you know, the second tallest thing in town next to the Devon Tower. They got Anthony Davis. And then, oh yeah, their middle guy in the starting lineup in terms of strength and size is LeBron James. So, you know, it was a non-starter is a good way to say it. So, some good things came out of it though.
Yeah,
I thought, starting with your man Poku.
It's your man Poku.
Well, I love Poku. I do have to admit it, and.
I've been disagreeing with you for, I think, every podcast when you said, you know what, he's a little better than he's been billed defensively. And I'm like, no. I'm before he even suits up for the Thunder, I write that he's got a chance to be the worst defensive player in the NBA. And then Mark Daigneault, I sort of cringed when he said it, because it confirmed what you're saying. He's like, yeah, his defense is ahead of his offense. And if you watch the games, that's pretty obvious. Like, he's way better defensively than offensively. But in my head, I'm thinking, you know what, he's going to just get killed defensively, but he can do a lot of things offensively. But the offense isn't there at all. The defense, he did score a career high 10 points. That's can't take that from him. But he had three blocks tonight, and these blocks and him, you know, messing with guys with his length sort of seems to be a real thing so far.
Yes. He's just got so long arms and he's so tall to start with. It's not like he's got great timing. I'm not trying to pretend, you know, that he's Dikembe Mutombo or Alonzo Mourning or somebody. And it's not like he's jumping out of the gym to block shots and just, you know, this is not Rudy Gobert. He's not going to become Rudy Gobert. But he's so dang long that he can just reach out and hit a ball out of the, you know. And guys aren't ready for it, particularly where he's coming from. Most shot blockers are down on the block. They're sort of facing the defense. He gets some of his blocks looking at the basket, you know, recovering, following, or helping or something. Not necessarily backside help, but just sort of going into the lane and throws his arms up. And it's like, you know, it's sort of like power lines that get in the way of birds. And you know, it hit something. And you know what? It's been a fit. Did he have three blocks tonight? I think he had three blocks tonight. He's averaging what, one a game, I think? I think he's got seven or eight blocks this year. And that's about what he's played. So I think just being that tall, you know, length, when people. There might be some people that don't understand the new term length. That's not a St. Joe. You're a young lad. You don't know this kind of stuff. Length is not an old term in the NBA or in basketball vernacular. It's like come around in the last 15, 20 years.
Wingspan.
In 1984, nobody was talking about length, but that's what they mean is length is, you know, a guy that's 6'7", you know, Roby, for instance. I mean, Roby's a perfectly fine basketball player, but when he throws his arms up, he doesn't really get in the way much. Poku throws his arms up, and you think, golly, I got to try to shoot over that thing.
Yeah.
So it's got some value. Just his length, his wingspan, his height, his arm length has value.
He's up to 11 blocks now.
11 blocks, and he's played what, nine games?
Nine games.
Shoot, he might, you know, he's averaging 1.2 blocks a game.
Yeah, and a lot of them are like sort of help side. It's like if he's drifting off his guy a little bit, or if he's taken into the lane, then someone's driving from the other side of the basket, and he's been able to get those blocks. So, I think you are correct. Like I know I pushed back against it. I was wrong. Like he was billed sort of incorrectly. Like his defense is ahead of his offense. Like that's.
Yes.
It's not really close.
No, it's not. And it reminds me of a story. Wayman Tisdale, 1982, came out of Booker T. Washington in Tulsa. Great, great sign for Billy Tubbs. Wayman was a blue chip. Everybody in the nation wanted him. OU beat out Georgetown in the Patrick Ewing era for Wayman Tisdale. And, of course, I'd only seen Wayman play once, I think, and I was young and didn't pay any attention anyway. I was 21. So, you know, I'm thinking, it's good that you got him. And Al Eschbeck was and Al's a good friend of mine. I'm making fun of Al here just because he is my friend. He was really into basketball recruiting. And I remember what he kept saying that summer is, Wayman Tisdale is an elite defender. Shot blocking, all those kinds of things. His offensive game, he'll become really good, but it's got some improvement to do. In Wayman Tisdale's second college game, he scored 51 points. So if Poku is driving down Wayman Tisdale Boulevard, where, you know, we got him all wrong, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
That's a really good story. Let's talk a little about Poku's offense, because he, like I said, career high 10 points. He was 4 of 9, 2 of 4. You know, he doesn't move. He's not a really fluid offensive player. Like he's kind of choppy, looks indecisive. Obviously we've seen the turnovers. Where would you like to see him improve offensively? Like, is it just taking care of the ball first and foremost? Or?
Yes. He's a turnover machine. His shot looks good to me.
It's kind of a line drive, but maybe that's
a line drive shot, but it looks good. It looks good. Now, I would need to probably talk to a physicist about this. Do tall players need to shoot with less arc and short players need to shoot with more arc? I don't know the answer to that. A physicist probably, or a geometry teacher probably, could answer those questions for us. Lou Dort acts like he's trying to bank the ball off the lights on top of the arena. but Poku looks like he's trying to get the ball 10 feet, 3 inches above the rim. That's what his shots look like. But to me, it looks good. And he shoots with confidence. He told you, I think, or somebody after the game, he wants to improve and he's working on his dribbling. Well, he actually is not for a 7-footer. He doesn't dribble half bad. For one possession or maybe two tonight, Daigneault had Poku initiating the offense.
Yeah, I think he can dribble. He can play off pick and rolls.
Yeah, so I think he's going to be a good rebounder. I mean, he's not terrible now. He only grabs a few a game.
We've seen him lead the break once he gets a defensive rebound.
Yeah, so I'm actually really encouraged. His shooting percentage is so bad just because he's, for whatever reason, he can't make any. But everything else about his game is better than I thought it was going to be. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think there is, steady improvement and some encouraging signs there. By the way, credit to Myron Patton for basically getting confirmation that Poku just learned about the rules that you can't.
That's
off the rim.
That was very strange. Yeah, he'd have three or four more blocks if they wouldn't quit changing the rules on the guy.
Going on his basketball reference page and saying, I know I've had more than that, but
wouldn't you think somebody would have told him in Thunderville?
I mean,
wouldn't you? And I can practice. Maybe they haven't practiced enough for him to even figure it out. That no, I can't grab the ball off the rim.
It is very odd that didn't come up.
To me, it's very odd. It's worth asking Daigneault about it. Maybe I'll try to ask him Friday night. I can. He seems to like me. Okay, maybe he can take a shot from us wondering, why you didn't tell the Serb about the American rules.
Yeah, I think there'd be American basketball 101 on his first day or something like that.
And he said he grew up watching Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Maybe he just figured, well, those dolts hadn't figured out that they ought to just grab the ball out of the basket, keep the other team from scoring. Anthony Davis could block some shots if they let him goaltend. He'd have 14 blocks a game, which is why we have the rule. So, that was fun. That to me, Poku made the game bearable tonight. The last quarter and a half, little bit of a struggle for me because last night I watched three basketball games in their entirety, and two of them were really good games: Thunder Spurs, OSU Kansas went down to the wire. And after you've watched a scintillating basketball game, a 30-point blowout can be a little bit of a stress.
So, Josh Hall and Moses Brown and Justin Jackson didn't quite keep you engaged there at the end, or did you learn anything from those guys?
I actually find Moses Brown a little bit interesting. Yeah. Josh Hall doesn't do anything for me.
Moses Brown is enormous.
He's every time I see him, I'm more impressed than I was the previous time. What do they list him at? Do they list him at 7 foot? What's he listed at? He's a long, tall drink of water, let me tell you. I don't know.
7'2", 245.
7'2". Well, there you go. Let me tell you what. There's a difference between 6'4 and 6'6", and there's a difference between 7 foot and 7'2", which explains Rudy Gobert, by the way, to everybody. So, I think he could have, if he develops, he could have a future. I don't really understand Josh Hall. That's a mystery to me, what he brings to the table as a two-way player. I'd go back to Devin Hall if it was me. If they're looking for a two-way player named Hall, I don't know what was wrong with the one they had last year.
Well, I think Josh Hall's defense, he's, you know, didn't play college basketball, committed to NC State, was a high-level prospect, was old enough as a five-year prep player to declare. So he's basically played no high-level basketball. So I think that's sort of –
So he's basically – he was like a redshirt freshman. I'm sorry. He was like a redshirt senior.
Yeah.
Coming out of high school. Well, that's interesting. You told me something I didn't know. I'm sure I read it. I'm sure it was in the pages of the Daily Oklahoman, and I just glossed over it. But that's interesting to me. So he played prep ball his fifth year.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. He still didn't do much for me. He didn't. You know, I'd like to see something else. But Brown. He is enormous. And what's his story? You got a good story about him too? You got
I wish. I don't have, you know, I know went to UCLA, one and done at UCLA.
Played. Did he do much at UCLA?
He was like, I think he was on the all freshman team, but he didn't do a lot. He went undrafted, played with the Trailblazers last year as a two-way player. So this is his second stint as a two-way player with two different teams. So that's fairly interesting. I don't know if that gives you enough there.
Well, I generally like Portland as an organization, so that's encouraging to me. I mean, if you're a two-way guy at Charlotte, that doesn't mean anything. That means they just, you know, they're just filling out a roster. But Portland knows what it's doing. All freshman Pac-12 or all freshman America? All America.
Pac-12, yeah.
So. Oh. Well, okay. Anyway, I do. I'm glad you told me he's 7'2" because he certainly looks big. I just never bothered to look and see how big, and that's good. And you know what? That's one good thing about these three blowouts they've had. These guys are getting to play. You know, they're putting in the work. They're busting their butt. They're trying to get a break. I'm glad they get to play a little bit. You know.
By the way, we've got to get Moses Brown's Google score a little higher, because if you Google Moses Brown, what pops up is an American industrialist born in Providence, Rhode Island in 1738. So not quite the Moses Brown we're looking for.
No. I will say this. I always love the first name Moses. I like biblical Old Testament names anyway. Moses is near the top. I love the name Moses. So I give him props for that.
Okay.
Al over there, Josh Hall, you know, go down any street in America and there's 23 guys named Josh or Joshua, but you don't come across a lot of Moseses. So salute to Moses Brown.
Now you're just going out of your way to criticize Josh Hall for no good reason. I'm going to have to do a Josh Hall story soon. He's actually the only player we haven't talked to yet. He's not.
Oh, really? Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. I have not asked to speak with him, but I need to do that. It's about time for a Josh Hall story. Not too much. We've really only talked about the reserves. Starters, again, Roby started, you know, had 11 points, 9 rebounds. Dort, another good shooting night. He was 3 of 6 from three. Shea, 17 points. He led them in scoring. He had only one assist and only 2 rebounds. So we usually see a well-rounded game from Shea. But any of those starters you want to talk about?
Let me ask you a question. Of course, you were at the arena. I was watching on the telecast. I detected not bad blood, but I detected a competitive rivalry between SGA and Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, I should have asked Shea about it after the game because I was originally going to write about that.
I didn't. I don't know. And it wasn't long. It wasn't the whole game. I think it was mostly third quarter, if I remember right. I don't think it started out that way. I don't know. Schroeder wasn't playing very well to start with. SGA was. I don't know if that got Schroeder going. But at one point, you know, when they got that ball hung up and Schroeder's arm got tangled with SGA's, and I got to thinking, this was a fabulous, fabulous test or lesson for us for this reason. Most people not real fond of Dennis Schroeder as an opponent. He's a guy that rubs fan bases the wrong way until he plays for your squad, and then you love him. And he was the Thunder, you know, the Thunder fan base. And count me in the crowd. They just loved Dennis Schroeder. But now that he's on the other team, it's not like Steven Adams. I don't think it's going to be like Gallinari. I don't think it's going to be like Chris Paul. Although there's a little bit of Chris Paul in that over the years.
Yeah, I mean, Chris definitely talks – Schroeder talks a lot of trash, so I think that might play into
it. Well, there you go. Probably does. It probably does. Which, by the way, let me say this. Two straight games. I think this is the best two-game stretch of Michael Cage's broadcast career. He's actually told some really good stories the last couple of games. And he had a good one tonight about James Worthy. Never talked trash. Everybody, James Worthy was a cool dude, he said, and never talked trash. And that surprised me a little bit, but it was sort of nice to hear. And he told another good story about, you know, Chris Fisher set him up well. Because they were talking about people like Kenrich Williams and Poku. And these guys, you know, with very limited NBA experience, run out on the court and there's LeBron James. And not only that, they're having to guard him. And he asked Michael Cage, well, you know, was Jimmer ever aha, welcome to the NBA moment? And Cage said his NBA debut came against the Lakers, and they sent him in the game and told him to guard Kareem. And he said, I was all fired up. And he got the ball, and he went up for a sky hook. And he said he realized how Kareem got that sky hook off all those years. With his left hand, he just popped Michael Cage right in the lip. Busted his lip. So and he said it was Kareem. I didn't even mind. So, you know, that's cool. Kudos to Michael Cage. I think he's had two strong games.
You know, that is I thought about that though. Poku was asked about it after the game. Like, Poku was born in 2001. LeBron was drafted in 2003. You know, Poku obviously watched LeBron growing up, but, you know, coming over from Serbia, your first season in the NBA, it's gotta be sort of a starstruck moment if you're playing basketball on the same floor with LeBron James. I just think that's kind of crazy.
Well, it is crazy. And I had a similar situation in terms of thinking about this. You know, this is what the Thunder's, is this the 12th season for the Thunder or the 13th. I think he's the 13th, right? Yeah. Westbrook 11 and one without him. So this is 13 seasons. But we had two Hornets seasons and then a year in between. So really, we're coming up on 16 years of being an NBA city. When we became an NBA city, LeBron James was already in the league and already a star. And he's still, like, if he's not the best player in the league, I'm going to let somebody else tell him that he's not that he's not the best player in the league.
Yeah, so, I think you got to put him up there after what they did last year.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's LeBron. So, but yeah, and you're right. He's if he hangs on another couple of years, which I think he's going to be able to. He's going to play against guys that were born after he was in the NBA.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's a joy to watch LeBron. Like, he's still out there having fun. He still seems like he's really enjoying it. And he played really, really good tonight.
You know, I told my wife tonight during the game, I said, I said, in some ways, this pandemic is not too bad a deal, because here's the deal. I'm covering this game, and I'm probably going to cover it as well as I would have if I was there. I'd rather talk to players. I'd talk to coaches. I'd rather be sitting, you know, 20 feet from Mark Daigneault. There's a lot of things that I miss about it. But on the other hand, I'm getting to sit here with you and watch the game.
Yeah.
So that's not a bad thing. But then I said, on the other hand, if everything was open like normal, there'd be 18,200 Oklahomans who could have gone home tonight having said, I got to watch LeBron James play basketball live.
Yeah.
That's- and we've been doing that for 15 years, 15 seasons. But still, it's a special thing when LeBron James comes to town. It's a special thing when Tiger Woods comes to Southern Hills and plays a PGA or U.S. Open. And at some point, you know, we're always going to have great basketball players, but LeBron James, a mountain, he's a mountain peak
yeah.
in basketball. And when he retires, it might take a while for somebody to come along who's on his level. And for a while, maybe on the short side of that.
Yeah, he's an icon and definitely in his own tier as far as, you know, this generation. So do you still put – do you have the Lakers in a tier of their own if you're – I forgot what your title pick was, but
– I picked the Lakers. Yeah, I picked the Lakers. I didn't last year, but they proved they were the best last year, and then they got a lot better. I mean, Schroeder makes them better. Gasol, although he's on the downside – but he's going to help them. Montrezl Harrell helps them. They got a lot. They got a lot going on, and you know, there were times last year when Kyle Kuzma was their third best player.
He scored like 30 something points in Oklahoma City last year.
Yeah, and Kyle Kuzma's still a good player, but I'm thinking he's more like fifth or sixth best player on this team.
Yeah,
so. So they've gotten better, and I think they are the odds-on favorite to win it. Of course, COVID could mess with anything. An injury could mess with anything. Maybe James Harden and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant will become the three musketeers, one for all and all for one, and they'll rout the rest of the league. But in general, I don't think so. I think the Lakers will win it again.
And that is where I want to end with the news of the day in the NBA, which was not the Lakers steamrolling the Thunder. It was James Harden getting his wish, getting traded to Brooklyn. The Nets get Harden in the second round pick. The Rockets get Victor Oladipo, Dante Exum, Rodion Skurucs, four first round picks and four pick swaps. Jared Allen and Torian Prince go to Cleveland, and Caris LeVert goes to Indiana. So a lot of moving parts with Oladipo to Houston, LeVert to Indiana, Allen to Cleveland. But, of course, the headliner, James Harden to Brooklyn, playing with Kevin Durant, playing with Jeff Green, old friends back together again. You know, I haven't, you know, read everyone's opinion yet, but I certainly read what you wrote about the trade. Don't seem too high on it from the Nets' perspective. I'm sort of on the other end of this. They've definitely mortgaged their future. They are screwed if this does not work out. You know, those guys are all aging a little bit. This could be a fiasco for years to come for the Nets. But I'm just of the belief that championship windows hardly exist. And when they do, they're very short. And if you have a chance to add a top five NBA player to Kevin Durant, you've sort of protected yourself if Kyrie Irving doesn't want to play again, or you're protecting yourself from injury. And just to pair those guys together, I'm not so much worried about, you know, playing with one basketball. I'm more worried about what they're going to do defensively. But I'm not saying I would have been comfortable making that trade with the Nets, departing with all those picks. But, man, the star talent they've assembled, I think they're a definite contender in the East. I think they're the favorite. I think they're the favorite in the East.
You could be right, of course. There's two or three things I didn't like about the trade. One is, I don't really see how it will work chemistry-wise. If it wasn't Kyrie, maybe Durant and Durant and Harden, yeah, they can clearly coexist.
I would have loved to send
on the basketball
the deal,
but Kyrie, and you know what? I'm sort of on Kyrie's side if there is a problem, because Kyrie Irving is the best finisher in the NBA, and he's frankly the best I've ever seen in terms of point guards getting into the paint and being able to score in traffic. I've never seen anybody that good. Are he and Harden going to take turns with the ball in their hands? That doesn't seem likely to me, but maybe it is. Maybe Steve Nash, a Canadian, maybe he can, you know, international man of peace, can make everybody sing kumbaya. I don't anticipate that happening. The other thing, if the ball is not in James Harden's hand, what kind of a player is he? You know, there's talk. Everybody keeps talking about Harden and Durant played so well together in Oklahoma City. Yes, they did, and it was 9 years ago.
Yeah, that's totally irrelevant to me.
Yeah, and the trademark play of the James Harden era with the Thunder was that glorious back cuts that Harden always made with our old pal Nick Collison, getting the ball there at the mid post, making a bounce pass. They'd run that. They'd get teams three or four times a game on that. It's been at least 8 years since James Harden made a back cut. James Harden is not back cutting. The last 2 years, if somebody else, and he's played with superstar point guards the last 2 years. So it's not a terrible move to say, hey, let's let Chris Paul dribble for a minute. Let's let Russell Westbrook dribble for a minute.
Yeah.
If those guys dribbled, James Harden went and stood in the corner and pouted and never went past the timeline. So to me, it's a recipe for disaster. Maybe it will work. The other thing I don't like about it is, how could you possibly think trading Jared Allen is a good idea? Let me tell you who won the trade. Let me tell you who won this trade. The Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland Cavaliers were sitting there minding their own business, and somebody called them and said, listen, we got all this trade, and it doesn't matter who's going where, just a whole bunch of superstars are floating around. But we sort of need you. If you'd be willing to give up that first-round pick you got from Milwaukee, which is going to be 28, 29, or 30, if you're willing to give up that, we'll send you Taurean Prince and Jared Allen. You talk about a parade. Step aside, Baker Mayfield. You're not the best news of the week in Cleveland. They give you two good NBA players for almost nothing.
Yeah.
So Cleveland won the trade. The Cleveland Cavaliers won this trade.
You're probably not drafting, you know, a Jared Allen caliber player at 28, 29.
No, Jared Allen's a player. He's really good.
The thing is, like, it is a weird fit in Cleveland. I know that's not a big deal, but they've got Andre Drummond and JaVale McGee on the roster, so a lot of overlapping skills there. I mean, the Nets had to part with them, I guess, in this deal, but now they're left with DeAndre Jordan and Jeff Green as their center. I mean, like, they're very small inside now.
Yeah, and you know, DeAndre was a good player at one time. He's first team All NBA. I think it was 2014. So he can still do some things, but he's past his prime.
Yeah, well, a couple of years past.
Yes. So, and they do get very thin.
But when you can put out four scores, Durant, Harden, Irving, Joe Harris, that is just.
Yeah, no, they'll be able to score. You're right. If they can stay lucid, if they can, you know, I mean, literally, if they don't self-combust, you know. Here's the other thing I think about Durant. Durant, of course, is an evil. He's an evil man in the eyes of Oklahomans. And I've been hard on him, too. But in terms of just on the court, we have to admit, in Oklahoma City, he was never one problem on the court. In Golden State, he was never one problem on the court. To his credit, he's really meshed with other stars and and culturally, he's really, I think he's a good basketball teammate.
Mm-hmm.
He's also been beneficiary of being in two very comforting cocoons. The Thunder's a great culture, always has been. The Warriors, I know we don't like them. I know we think of Draymond Green and think they're the evil empire. But they got a great culture on that team and in that organization and with that franchise. Durant's never really been subjected to nonsense. He's about to enter the fun house. How's he going to react to that? I don't know.
It's a crazy situation. Like, Kyrie Irving is a huge problem on his own. Then you're adding Harden, who's been a huge problem in Houston. Not only, you know, obviously the partying and protocol issues, but frankly, I know the sample is small. His numbers are way down. He's not shooting well at all from three. He's getting to the free throw line far less than he has. Maybe he wanted no business playing for the – obviously, he didn't want to play for the Rockets, and maybe that was affecting his play. But he also is looking fairly out of shape, so I don't know how
– He looks bigger than – he looks like he weighs more than Lou Dort. I'm serious.
Not
he
quite
looks like fizzled. He looks like, right. He look, you know what? He looks like he weighs 240 pounds, which I don't know what that's all about. I'd recommend losing some of that because, you know, the Sixers are pretty serious. The Celtics are pretty serious. The Heat's pretty serious. So I just think here's how I see the trade for the Nets. The Nets were pretty high up on the list of interesting contending teams. Did they have room for improvement? Yes. Could they increase their upside? Yes. I just tend to think the risk of bringing them down is greater than the possibility of raising them up with this trade. And heck, for all I know, I'll be wrong.
And that's not even counting the future, because if it messes up this year, think how it's going to mess up in 2022, 2024, 2026, 2028, you know, for the rest of the decade, pretty much.
Yeah. You know, Houston's got to be hoping the Nets return to form. It's a franchise that, you know, has periodic success, but yeah, lots of downtimes too. So Houston's back in the draft. They're back in the draft game. So good for them.
Just real quick to wrap this up. Since where the Rockets pick is relevant to the Thunder, you know, they're getting better than expected play out of John Wall. Christian Wood has been excellent. They're, you know, DeMarcus Cousins is he's somewhat healthy again and playing, and now they add Oladipo. I don't know. Like, I don't know if the Rockets' outlook this year really changes all that much. I mean, I still think it could be perhaps a late lottery pick somewhere in like that mid-teens area. Where do you think that pick?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think the Rockets will make the playoffs, but I don't think they're going to stink. No. And that's actually not a bad thing for the Thunder, because, you know, if they're not able to make a trade and Harden goes AWOL or whatever, you know, who knows, that could go on south real fast. So I think they're going to be decent. The West is so deep. I don't think they can make the playoffs. So I think you're right. Let's see, 14 teams missed the playoffs. The Rockets could be, you know, anywhere 10, 11, 12, 13, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But that's not a bad play. I mean, if the Thunder's picking fifth, if you get the fifth and the 10th picks both, hey, I think Sam Presti would be happy with that.
Yeah, and then that's ammunition to maybe move up to 4 or 3 or 2 or something like that if you want to.
Yeah, trade them both and get the third pick. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Are you excited for Billy Donovan and the Bulls coming to Chesapeake Energy Arena on Friday?
No, I'm not. Because
they were here twice in the preseason, so it's not super.
I literally watched preseason basketball. You know, when Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant's here, I'm not no reason to watch preseason. But this was so new. I actually watched two preseason games. Don't want to watch another, but don't really want to watch the Bulls again. I feel like I've seen the Bulls more than I've seen like the Mavericks. So I'm not excited about it, but it is going to be an interesting game. Is the Thunder put? They hadn't played at Chicago yet.
No. Both preseason games are here.
Yeah, that's right. It's fascinating theater though, because to me it's a great question. Did Billy Donovan make the right choice? Who has a brighter future, the Thunder or the Bulls? To me, it's quite likely that the near future, and I don't just mean this year, but the next couple of years, Chicago. But 5 years, I think I'd have cast my lot with the Thunder. So,
yeah,
that's a really interesting discussion point, is what we see with Billy Donovan's career as a coach.
Yeah, if you're asking which team is actually closer to contention, I would say the Thunder, because they've got this huge draft capital and all of these picks in the coming years. Now, and I'm only saying that because, you know, the Bulls are not going to contend in the East unless, you know, some of these young players like Coby White, Markin and Carter take a huge step up. But the Bulls are clearly better than the Thunder right now. They're clearly going to be better than the Thunder next season and maybe the year after that. I think what Billy had to weigh, though, is was he going to be the coach that long? Was he going to keep getting extended? Because he, as a coach, I don't think you can really look as Sam Presti does 5 years down the line. So that surely was some of his calculus. He was going to what is a ready-made, not contender, but a ready-made playoff contender. So I think that's why he made the choice. And the money was quite good in Chicago.
Yeah, and you know what? It's not a bad place to live, especially since you know, the months of December, January, and February, you're pretty busy anyway. You know, that's when it'll kill you to live in Chicago, 11 degrees outside every day. But summers in Chicago, spring and fall is pretty nice. So, heck, I wish Billy well. I like him a lot. I do say this, though. Mark Daigneault has been a breath of fresh air, and he's been a lot more interesting to talk to than Billy Donovan.
I think we learn more.
We learn more. He says more about his team. Like last night, I thought I asked him a good question. I don't know if it's a good question. I asked him a question, and he gave a good answer about, you know, lack of turnovers. And he basically explained his defensive philosophy, which is, or at least for this team, which is we don't really, you know, get aggressive on the pick and roll. We play drop coverage, which means you don't really pressure a ball handler, and you're not going to let a guy roll to the basket unencumbered. And, you know, that's the kind of insight we didn't get much out of Billy Donovan or, frankly, Scott Brooks.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. I really do.
No, he has been good to cover. I'm learning a lot from him and sort of he's quite honest with us. So that has all been good. But Billy against Mark Daigneault obviously coached – at Florida, not really was even a coach, but it was a grad assistant and basically an assistant to Billy Donovan rather than an assistant coach on Donovan's staff at Florida. Then they worked together for once last season with the Thunder. So definitely some interesting storylines there. And we will be back, as always, after that to recap Thunder versus Bulls on Friday night. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.